This is HMM's Alexis Goldsmith, and I'm joined by Dr. Dave Walker, retired geologist from Columbia University and the Lamont Doherty Observatory. Welcome to HMM, Dave.
Thanks very much, Alex. Nice to be here.
So you recently tested some dust samples from Saratoga sites and a house that is across the street from Saratoga sites. Can you give us some background on why you were looking at this dust?
Yeah, a number of folks are concerned about the emissions that are coming from the Norlite company in South Cahos, just off of Route 32. It has been around for a long time, and maybe 35, 40 years ago, they changed from normal fuels to combustible but toxic materials. And so they doubled as a hazardous waste incinerator at the same time fueling their aggregate formation process with the toxic waste. This was sort of going on quietly and emitting lots of smells and dust for many years. And the whole thing blew up about a year ago when it was discovered that not only were they burning regulated toxic wastes, things like PCB-laced oils and chlorinated solvents and the like, which do need some place to be disposed of properly. And you may have issues with whether burning is the right way to do it, but it's certainly better to try and burn it responsibly than dumping it off in the woods somewhere. So it was discovered that they were taking highly toxic and unregulated stuff like the PFAS, that's perfluoroalkyl substances, the principal ingredient of AFFF, which is aqueous film-forming foam used in firefighting. This stuff is found to be toxic, and so there are huge inventories of this stuff around the country that need to be disposed of, and Norlite had a contract to dispose of them. They clandestinely burned a huge amount of this stuff in 2018 and 2019 until it developed that they were doing that, and there was immediately a huge public outcry. We could talk about that some other time, or I dare say you've done that yourself already. The issue was, oh my goodness, if they're doing that, what else might they be doing? And a lot of people said, hey, you know, they're emitting a lot of soot and dust, and it's really disgusting, and you know, we don't like living under this cloud of stuff that's always descending on us from the Norlite property. I only became really interested in this when Joe Ritchie, who lives at Saratoga Sites, which is just alongside the incinerator, posted a picture of the dust that had accumulated on his windshield in one day. And as a geologist, I looked at that and I said, oh no, that isn't soot. That's nothing to do with the combustion process. The only other place I've seen stuff like that is when you have an explosive volcanic eruption, pyroclastic debris, ash, cinders, whatever. It looks very much like what you've got on your windshield. But I didn't know of any local volcanoes that would do that. And so I thought maybe if Joe sent me some of that dust, I could, you know, have a look at it and try and resolve what it was. So Joe sent me a sample, and first time I looked at it under the microscope, there was actually no doubt in my mind that this stuff was essentially volcanic glass. It had the glass character, it had the shardy-like presentation, and it was full of bubbles, which is pretty unique when the glass isn't full of bubbles, and industrial glass really isn't either. So we're looking for a volcano. Well, you know, there isn't one locally, and we didn't have to look very far to actually find what the volcano was. In the process of making the aggregate, shale was passed through a high temperature kiln, which then dewaters the clays, partially melts the shale, and puffs it up into their ceramic-like aggregate. And one only has to take a look at the scrapings off a piece of their aggregate to realize that the bubbly glass matrix material, which is almost the entire body of the dust in Joe's windshield, was Norlite aggregate. End of story. The same stuff shows up in Ed Sokol's attic across Route 32 from Saratoga site. So it isn't just the fence line. It's whatever it is, the process which allows fugitive dust to escape from the Norlite property. It gets it at least as far as the far side of Route 32 and a little bit beyond that. And at the present state of things, the extent of the emissions in terms of aerial distribution, how far away it got, isn't well known. And that's something that ought to be investigated, and I believe it probably will be.
So just for clarification, what is bubbly glass matrix?
Well, when you take shale and you thermally treat it, running it through a kiln, shale is basically a mix of mineral particles, most of which are clays, and then there's some feldspars and quartz and a few other exotic things thrown in there. Clays don't stand up very well to heat treatment. They tend to boil off the water, which is an integral part of their structure. And in doing so, the partial melting process at high temperature traps the emitted water and puffs up the body of the material until it becomes a bubbly foam-like body of material instead of a hard, dense, consolidated rock like a shale. And so the thermal emission of water leads to the puffing up. I'm sorry, I've sort of missed, there was another thread to your question which I haven't answered, and I'm sorry, you'll have to remind me what that was, what you were asking.
Well, I just wanted, you know, to understand why the glass must have come from a heat source.
Yes. So the partially melted part of the, you don't get glass without melting. And so the partial melting required thermal treatment. And the fact that it's bubbly gives you a clue that something was giving off a vapor. And it's a very simple step to go from, oh, clays and quartz, that's what a shale is, to let's heat treat that. We partially melt. The clays especially give off the water, and the glass is a result of that thermal treatment. You partially melted it and then frozen it. But in the process of melting and freezing it, a lot of the vapor, which is coming off the decomposing clays, it's trapped as bubbles. And the bubbly glass matrix is absolutely distinctive of volcanic ash and so on and so forth. And in this case, we looked at some of the norlite aggregate, and it's a dead certainty that we're dealing with the same stuff. The bubbly glass that's on Joe's windshield is the same as the material that they're selling as aggregate, except for it's now been powdered up into fine fragments, which will actually be suspended in the air and transported over the fence across Route 32. Who knows how much farther it goes.
And another key finding was that the dust at Saratoga sites on Joe Ritchie's windshield was reduced compared to that in Ed Sokol's attic. Can you explain what that means?
I'm not sure I've quite got the drift of your question. There is a component of the material that's collecting on Joe's windshield, and which is undoubtedly present in the aggregate which is sourcing this stuff, and that is the superfine particles.
Right. And so you said that in your letter that the finer particles are missing from Joe's windshield.
So I'm not saying there's any minerals missing. I'm just saying in the normal size distribution of grinding stuff up, there'll be a lot of stuff that sort of defines the middle of the bell-shaped curve of sizes, and some big stuff which might not get transported by wind. And then there's going to be a tail of the distribution, which is very, very fine stuff. You know, you get a range of sizes when you crunch something up.
Right, but the fine stuff is traveling farther.
My hypothesis is, and this would be very testable by doing much more extensive aerial sampling of the dust, is that since Joe is right across the fence from the piles of aggregate, which are uncovered and can therefore disseminate any fines by a wind that blows through them, by the time they've jumped the fence, you know, they've gone 50 feet, 100 feet, the fine particles are still in suspension in the air, whereas the heavy stuff falls out on Joe's windshield. By the time it gets on the far side of Route 32 and into Ed Sokol's attic, the fines are still suspended, but they settle out in the quiet air of Ed's attic, and that's why we're seeing them there, whereas I think we don't see the fines on Joe's windshield because they continually get stirred away by the air currents. An interesting test would be to go into the attics of Saratoga sites, if there are any. I don't really know what the distribution of the spaces within that are. And if there are quiet spaces where fine particles could settle out with time because they're not continually stirred by the wind, then maybe you find the fines there as well. It's hard to imagine there not being fines in there unless they're being moved along by the same process that brought not the coarse stuff, but the medium fines, which are present in Joe's windshield dust samples.
So Norlite has some massive piles of aggregate at their site, some of them just about 100 feet away from where people live, and the dust is blowing off of these piles, you know, into Saratoga sites and beyond. But just how much dust is accumulating where people live? Do we have any idea?
Well, my sampling would not be sensitive to the total flux of dust that is available in a quiet space. And that's a study that remains to be done. But an interesting comparison for what the rate of accumulation of dust might be would be to say, you know, how long does it take Joe to build up a good gooey windshield full of this stuff? And if you go a far distance from Norlite, you know, how far or how far do you have to go? Or if you're far away, what's the dust accumulation rate like there? I took note of the DEC's press release in which they were concerned that the estimate of how much quartz, which is perhaps one of the agents of toxicity in this dust, they said the finding of only 20% quartz in Joe's windshield stuff wouldn't be a big surprise, because generically, if you look at dust throughout the U.S., you know, that's in the normal range. So their feeling is that that is the big surprise, that we found that quartz in Joe's windshield dust. And they're right. It is about a normal amount of quartz. But what really counts for exposure to toxic materials is not only the percentage in the dust that you're seeing, but how much dust are you seeing? So I went and looked at my barn in Rockland County. And sure enough, there's about 20% quartz in that dust. But the difference is that it took me I sampled the surface that I knew had been clean 28 years ago when I put a trunk up in the top of my barn, and I hadn't been moved in 28 years. And I took sweepings off the top of the trunk, and you know, it wasn't that much dust, and it took 28 years to accumulate the amount of dust that Joe gets on his windshield in a couple of days. So the flux of dust that's coming across the fence and landing on Joe's windshield is huge. And so the importance of the finding of this fairly unpleasant material is that it's fairly unpleasant material that's coming across the fence at rather high volume. And I don't think that's in dispute. There have been complaints for more than 30 years about the volume of dust, which is collecting in people's porches and windowsills and car windshields all over that neighborhood. So this is news.
You called the quartz an agent of toxicity. Why is the dust toxic?
Well, it is well known, and it's fact one of the oldest and most well documented of the industrial diseases known to man. The disease is silicosis, and it comes from the industrial cutting and grinding of quartz-rich, or I should say free crystalline silica-rich products. They could be agates, they could be pumices, they could be granites, or even just the people who blast out quartz to add to the glassmaking industry, all are vulnerable to the accumulation of little shardy particles of quartz, little fibers, little shards that lodge in your respiratory system. Tends to be quite bad for your health. In fact, it's typically fatal. And this is not a secret. In fact, if you look at the manufacturer's safety data sheet that goes with Norlight aggregate, they say, oh, you shouldn't breathe the dust from this stuff. It'll cause silicosis. And, you know, what can I say? Yeah, sure. The normally accepted agent for the cause of silicosis is that shards of quartz, especially ones which are freshly broken, lodging in your lungs, have some surface chemical capacity for interacting with your lung tissue to cause this series of unpleasant mucousy fibrotic reactions that lead to this condition of silicosis. I'm not a medical doctor, and I cannot give you a, you know, chapter and verse account of a long and painful death by silicosis, nor do I wish to. But I am a mineralogist, and I do know something about the structure of quartz. And in addition to its potential chemical toxicity, it has a property known as conchoidal fracture, which means when it breaks into extra sharp, shard-like particles, which are the principal ingredient of lava soap, which aren't quartz, they're pumice. And pumice has the same capacity to break into very sharp particles, which lacerate. That is the mechanism of cleaning your skin when you use lava soap. You're essentially scraping off with these little micro knives to the surface of your epidermis to really get the ingrained dirt out of it. You take the whole skin off with it. And I can't imagine that's very good to have that kind of stuff working its way through your pulmonary system. And so in addition to the quartz, which is a known toxic agent in terms of causing silicosis, it's my opinion, although it's my opinion that doesn't have a large body of medical backup on that, is that putting a lot of sharp particles of foreign substance into your lungs is bad for you. And so there's plenty of that in the dust that's settling on Joe's windshield and in Ed's attic. The particle size distribution on Joe's windshield is towards the high end of what you might regard as possibly airborne dust. In Ed's attic across Route 32, there's a rather large distribution of the small size fractions that are available there, which I hypothesize settled quite, they sort of wafted to the bottom when the air wasn't disturbed, as it wouldn't be very much up in the attic.
So you mentioned the Norlight's material safety data sheets for the aggregate. I've read those data sheets. It says that, you know, if a particle is a certain size, you must wear a mask. If a particle is a certain below that size, then you must wear a full respirator. And these are the requirements for employees of Norlight. So obviously the environmental justice concern being that there isn't a similar protocol for the community that's being subjected to this kind of dust. Would you say that's fair?
I don't think it's very fair that they're admitting this stuff. I mean, my original horror at looking at Joe's windshield was, as somebody who knows about volcanic eruptions and knows about the dangers of volcanic ash, the first thing you do when you're entering an area like that that's loaded with volcanic ash all over your windshield is wear a respirator, for crying out loud. You don't want that stuff in your lungs. And what's to me fairly shocking is that these complaints have been going on for years, and yet somehow a fugitive dust capture plan does not seem to be at all successful. The stuff is still coming out of Norlite. It's still coming out in great volumes. Just look at what accumulates on Joe's windshield in a couple of days.
Dr. Walker, in our last couple of minutes, what should the DEC do to contain the dust and prevent it from escaping into the community?
Well, my feeling is that they should immediately order Norlite to cover those particles after they shut them down until they can actually figure out how to better contain this stuff. This is a test for the DEC. Here's a clear and present danger, and there's an easy fix for it. Covering the piles, putting the conveyor belts into silos instead of into open piles and stuff like that. It's not very expensive, and it's going to be a lot more effective than running open conveyors onto great big open piles and letting the wind sift the stuff across the landscape and be kind of bad for folks.
Is there anything else you want to add before we close?
I had a chat with some of the folks at the DEC this morning, and I'm pleased to report that they understand the issues and they're trying their best to do a thorough study of actually how far the dust is getting and what the particle size distribution of the dangerous material is, at which point we'll be looking very hard to see whether DEC follows through and in fact gives some relief to the neighborhood that's suffering from the rather unfortunate effects of having a bunch of sharp-ended toxic particles dumped into their air.
Well, if folks want to ask the DEC a question directly, they'll have the chance to, because the DEC is holding another public information session on Norlite on Wednesday, February 3rd at 6 p.m. And the information for how to access that meeting is going to be posted along with this podcast on our website and on our Facebook page at facebook.com/media sanctuary. Dr. Walker, thank you so much for joining us again on HMM.
Thanks very much, Alex. Good day to you.